Emerging technologies are transforming the healthcare industry as we know it. Investors, say hello to HTEC, a portfolio dedicated to capturing the significant growth potential of healthcare innovation. Learn more at roboglobal.com/HTEC.
I can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody!
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hello, everybody, and welcome again to Nerd to the Third Power, your one-stop shop for all things nerdy and awesome. I'm your host and master of ceremonies, Dr. Gonzo. With me, as always, this epic quest of awesomeness is our resident anime goddess, the Cat. Cat, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing okay. I'm all right.
That's enthusiastic!
I'm sorry, my state is back under floods. I don't know what to tell you. I haven't slept for like 2 nights because of the storms.
So you literally just rode on in. Okay, all right.
Yeah, it's been kind of weird, guys. I'm tired. I'm just so goddamn tired.
That does explain the dengue that you brought in with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I pulled up to the studio and I saw like a fucking rowboat there, and I'm like, what's going on here?
My paddle's in the hall. Just, you know, like we'll just need to put a little like wet floor sign near it because it's still kind of dripping.
Yeah, we probably should. That's a workplace lawsuit waiting to happen. Anyway,
Skyblaze, all over this.
Skyblaze, how are you doing this week?
Better than last week. So, yes, always I'm alive good. This week. I was close to dead last week.
Your body plots treachery once more.
Yes.
And Birdman, how are you doing?
My nipples stand erect. I'm great. That's what I thought you'd say.
Good to know.
Okay.
Stunned silence. Yes.
We're gonna have to have a talk, you and me, Birdman. But yes, we got a full boat this week, at least for the first half, because Birdman's gonna be ducking out after Ask a Geek. But we got a fun show tonight. Tonight we are gonna be discussing Lucifer and Good Omens. Couple of topics that Cat and Skyblaze have held me at gunpoint to get me to put on the rotation, such as their love for these two properties.
Sword point, please. I'm civilized.
So, but that's going to be fun. But, of course, there's prestige to follow, so we're going to begin with our semi-recurring segment, the random topic of the week. So I have talked about how I collect video games, and Skyblaze also collects as well. Maybe not as gung-ho as I am, but she certainly is a collector of her own stripe. Mike, you collect toys. And Kat just hoards dice like a dragon of old.
Oh my god, it's real bad, you guys.
And of course, you know, in every kind of collection hobby, you know, there's always items that you know are going to be really expensive. I know for a fact that I'm never going to be able to afford a copy of Agane for, you know, Super Nintendo. Skyblaze plots my murder to get my copy of Knuckles Chaotix. And yep. Birdman has traded in some pretty significantly pricey toys in his time. So, but of course, there's also those items that are just kind of weird and off the wall that when you kind of look into them, you kind of get surprised. Wow, people will pay that much for this sort of thing. And this topic came up from something that you discovered a couple weeks ago, Skyblaze, that turned out to be a pretty nifty item that people would be willing to pay a bunch for. So why don't you tell us a bit about that?
Which are you referring to?
The watch.
Oh, the watch, right, yeah. Back in the early 90s, my parents gave me this little LCD watch that was Super Mario themed, and it actually had a little like Game & Watch style game on it. It ran out of batteries sometime in the late 90s, early 2000s, and I just put it in a box and forgot about it. I rediscovered it relatively recently, and it had the world's most minuscule screws, but I did manage to get them out and put a new battery in, discovered it still worked. And out of curiosity, I just did a Google search for it and discovered that, yeah, people actually pay a decent amount for these. I think a version still in box was going for like 80 quid. My version, well, it didn't have its buckle on it, so I had to replace the buckle on it. But yeah, it was one of those things where I was like, really? Why?
So the random topic this week is, what is the weirdest thing that you've seen in your hobby go for a lot of money? So, Birdman, you since you deal with toys, what's a toy that you're surprised that people have paid a lot of money for, that you're surprised that you had to pay for, that got paid a lot for?
It's a part to the Ghostbusters original Kenner Firehouse, because finding these complete is a bit of a trick. Usually, the containment unit's missing, the top's missing of the containment unit, or maybe the fire pole. But the part that always goes for large money is the firehouse sign. The one that has the Ghostbusters logo on the front of it. I have a custom one because I don't care. I've got the Ghostbusters logo on one side, the other one is the Ghostbusters 2 sign, so I have a dual firehouse. That part alone I've seen go for, at the time I seen it go between 50 and 100 bucks. I don't know what it's worth now, especially with the advent of 3D printing. But yeah, people will pay stupid money for old parts to old toys. Another part that I know goes for large money is in the Transformers fandom. If you're a fan of the character Jetfire,
he's based
upon the Macross Bandai toys or whatever. And when he transforms, he has different parts of his armor. The armor goes for a chunk, but the part that goes for the most is an easily lost tiny clip that goes into the gun. That can set you back a couple hundred bucks.
Damn.
Things like Swoop's head as well.
Yep.
Yeah, that tends to go for quite a bit. I've seen it. Because there's parts bins at conventions where with individual posted parts, and it's like tiny pieces, and they're like, how much for this? 50 quid. What?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Transformers parts, especially from the 80s, are annoying. And especially since a lot of these toys were played with, they're worn out. That's why sometimes you can sell broken Transformers for a surprising amount, because people will part them out and Frankenstein their own complete versions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kat, what about you? What's something that you've been surprised to see go for a lot of money?
You know, nothing really. But on the other hand, okay, so I was getting ready to do like a yard sale thing, and I was like, I'll sell some of my pops, because if you don't know me, and you don't know that I have about a bajillion pops, because I bought like 5 and then people were like, oh, she collects them. We'll give her all the pops. So I have like so many. And I expect them to be like Beanie Babies. Like, oh, the resale value? Non-existent. So I was going to go sell some. And then I just like looked on eBay at some of them. And I was like, oh.
Why did I ever take that out of the package?
I guess I'm not selling this at comic book shop yard sale for $5 just to get it off my shelf. Guess I'm gonna sell that on eBay for like $50, because apparently somebody needs Spike from Buffy more than me.
Those convention exclusives will go for loads of money too. It's insane. Or the Loot Crate exclusives. And they're going out of business, so if you got those Loot Crate exclusives, you're sitting on some buck right now.
I do have some Loot Crate exclusives.
Oh, shit.
Lots of them.
Oh, there's shit, also, I do too.
Also a really weird thing that happens with it's not just Funko Pops. There's also the Gundam kits, and there's a few things like Magic cards and Yu-Gi-Oh cards, because of the companies either screwed up the distribution or a kit was just not released in a given region. I know there's a lot of trade between Japan and the UK for Gundam kits, because some of the Gundam kits were very common here are rare as rocking horse poo over there, and vice versa.
Man, you want to talk about... Sorry, go ahead.
I've got a friend of mine who owns one of only two of the particular Gundams that exist in this country.
Wow, man. Swing back to talking about magic cards. Let me tell you about my man Chip, who for a stretch of like 2 years was unemployed, yet still managed to pay all of his bills and still be able to, like, you know, have money to go out and raise hell with me. And one day I finally asked him, I was like, you know, dude, I never hear about you going to work. I know you, I don't think you, unless you got a job or something that I don't know about, where are you getting the money? And it's like, oh, I just once a month I go up to Squabbles and I sell a magic card. Not magic cards, magic card, singular.
Jesus.
And the nature of the proceedings was there was an exchange student from another country that was living at his house, and the exchange student by kismet was also big into magic, and he sold this guy a card from a set that wasn't released over there, and I remember exactly what card it was because I just remember my jaw hit the floor at how much he got for this card. It was the Cheese Stands Alone.
Fuck from, yes.
I think it was called the Unglued set.
Unglued, yeah.
Yeah, and this guy paid him about $500 for this card, which now, granted, I don't know magic, but I don't think that card is worth that much.
It was, I think, yeah, it was from the Unglued set, and I think the Cheese Stands Alone. I think that came as a promo card in like Toy Fair or something like that at the time. So this kid could have went to his local newsstand and got, if I'm not mistaken. So. Yeah, he got taken for a ride. Good on him.
Yeah. So, so anyways, now I want to put the question to you, our audience. What is a weird item weird geek item that you've seen go for a lot of money that you wouldn't really expect to see go for for the big bucks? So, go ahead and sound off in the comments or in the email, and let's hear from you. And so with that, now we are going to jump right into our favorite segment, the Ask a Geek. And let's see, we got some questions here. Alrighty, let's see. Okay. Alright. Okay, here's a good question here from all of us. For all of us. I said from all of us. No, for all of us. And it is from Tyler, and he asked all of us, have you ever been involved in interested in a fandom that you are not interested in the core source material? For example, maybe you collect art books for an anime that you don't watch, or toys for a movie that you have never seen. So I'll go ahead and open with this one because I actually have an answer at the ready for it. And that is, I have never played a Splatoon game. I don't play online games. I mean, I have them in my collection, but I've never like really played into them very seriously. But I have just like fallen in love with this world and its characters and its designs. I've got the art books and I've got a couple of the amiibo. And I actually, a couple weeks ago, I also purchased... This is for my above door shelf of awesome things. I purchased a pair of Callie and Marie plushies that I sat up there with my Morgana plushie from the Persona 5 Collector's Edition in between them. So Morgana's up there being a little pimp daddy. I've just fallen in love with like this world that Nintendo has created of these little squid people. But I have never played the game once in my life. So Skyblaze, what about you? Any similar interest in? Periphery interest in a fandom?
I'm trying to think. I suppose there's kind of a slight reverse thing in that I'm not a huge fan of manga, but I do have a whole fuck ton of the Dot Hack mangas because I wanted to know the rest of the story, and some of the story for Dot Hack is only in the manga. Which is very irritating. One of the manga series is terrible, but most of them are all right.
Okay. Kat, what about you?
By proxy, I enjoy Kingdom Hearts. And I know like a bit about like a lot of the different Final Fantasy games because my roommate is super into all of them, and I've like one of my friends has forced me to sit down and watch a playthrough a lot of Final Fantasy VII and was like, here, take my costume and be part of my cosplay group. So I've like cosplayed Final Fantasy without like ever playing the games.
You just absorb it by osmosis.
Yeah. So it's like I'm heavily invested in the characters of Kingdom Hearts, even though I have never played a game of Kingdom Hearts. It's just like a lot of watching my roommate play, her telling me about all the characters and me like reading the Wikipedia for it, just going, this is so weird. I can't keep track of anything. So yeah, that's what I'm like a proxy fan of. It's like, I enjoy these things. I'm not gonna go out of my way to like play one of the games or anything, but I'll just like enjoy it from the sidelines and enjoy people's reactions to things.
Okay, all right. Birdman, what about you?
I'd say I was a proxy, I was a fan, then I very heavily fell out of it, of the Walking Dead franchise. I only ever watched the TV show. I tried to read the comics, I gave up after issue 30. And I'd occasionally read the Wikipedia just to see what was going on every now and again. Because the TV show burned me so bad. But the comics, I'd read something interesting happened. Like, oh, you'll never believe who dies in this issue or how this sets up the world now. I'm thinking, okay, well, that's cool. I'll check it out. And yeah, it's always been one of those things where I kind of want to buy the comics now that I know I can get them in one complete shot. Just buy the collections or buy them digitally. But at the same time, that's a lot of reading, man. And I know how it ends. Like, I read the Wikipedia on how the story ends for Walking Dead. I'm, you know, kind of debating. I'm good. And much like Kat, I kind of have this interest in Kingdom Hearts 2 because it looks really, really, really cool. But that's a lot of game. I don't know if I have time to play all that. So JRPGs and me, I either love them or hate them. Persona 5 was such an outlier that I don't consider that really like, oh, he's in the JRPGs now. Like, no, nah, I don't know. That was a one-off. But Kingdom Hearts is something I've considered getting into. I love the character designs. I think the music of that series is amazing.
Yep.
And it's so fucking weird.
Yep.
Disney and Final Fantasy, it's so weird. So I don't know.
Happens when two executives get stuck in a lift together.
That's literally what happened.
That is literally what happened.
That's amazing.
All right. Okay, let's see. Next question here. This one comes from Mike. And he's got two questions. The first question is, what is the most you've ever been disappointed by something that you were so excited for? I'm going to take some time to think about this one. So Kat, why don't you go first on this one?
Sorry, can you repeat the whole question? I like spaced and caught the last half of it.
What is the most you've ever been disappointed by something that you were really, really excited for?
Ooh, the most. Okay, because that could be like a lot of things. Because I think it's so near and dear to my heart, I'm going to say the Hobbit movies.
Ooh.
Because Lord of the Rings is like my favorite like film franchise. I love the books so much. I love the Hobbit book. And I needed that movie, that trilogy to be so good. And a lot of it was good, but there was so much of it that was not good. And it was like, just a couple of changes and you could have had a solid film series. There's a lot of stuff in the Hobbit movies that I'm willing to forgive out of fandom, but there was a lot of stuff where it was like, this served no purpose and shouldn't have been in this film, and shame on you for including it. And it's just, you know, like when I'm there in the theater, I love it. And then as soon as I get out of the theater, I'm like, fuck, that could have been so good, but it wasn't.
Okay, Skyblaze, what about you?
I think mine's probably Tron Legacy.
Really?
Ooh. Yeah, because I am a massive fan of Tron. My computer won't play it, unfortunately. Well, my computer...
Your computer at the time isn't doing anything.
I tried to find a copy of Tron 2.0. Eventually, I just gave up and watched a long play of it. My favorite level in Kingdom Hearts 2 is Space Paranoids, the Tron level. I have a Tron Keyblade, for God's sake. And then they were like, we're making a sequel to Tron, and I was the happiest fucking person. Because I'd even like done a role-playing game that had elements of Tron in it. And I was so excited because it looked great and the music sounded amazing. And then I saw it, and the story was eh. And the main character was some asshole, and no one cares. It's like, what? Why? But it looks pretty.
That soundtrack is bitchin'.
Yeah, the soundtrack is amazing. And if you pretend that it's just a really long Daft Punk music video, it's fine. But it's not a good story. And I was so sad about that, because I love the world of Tron so much.
Okay.
We did at least get a decent animated series out of it, so there is that.
Okay. All right, well, for my answer, and I think, Birdman, you will join me in pouring one out for Mass Effect Andromeda, because you and I were both just, like, salivating.
I forgot for that about game. That. I had a different answer for you, but yeah, I forgot about this. Fuck, yeah, what a punch in the balls, man.
We were just so excited for it, and I know Birdman, I think you got a review copy of it. I still haven't played it because, like, everything I've heard about it from sources I trust was just like, you know, it is not a worthy successor to the original trilogy, and that disappoints me so hard, because, like, everything I read about it leading up to the release just had me so stoked and excited for it. Because, you know, you and I, we're both huge fans of that universe. Like, that's one of those universes, like, we could just live in. Like, we don't even need to do anything epic or important. We could just be like, you know, like a janitor in that universe. We'd be the happiest people in the world. But, like, oh, God, yeah, Mass Effect Andromeda, just such a disappointment.
I will say this. It's worth playing through once, but be happy with the romance you take and have that as your canon playthrough and you'll be fine. The answer I was going to give, this may surprise you. The thing that disappointed me the most, because I was so excited for it, Alien 3. Back in the 90s, because I'm
older. You were on a very famous TV show. Sorry, I couldn't resist.
Thank you. So I was watching Aliens, and at the end of Aliens, Hicks, Newt, and Ripley survive. They're on the Sulaco. They're going back to Earth. So, Alien 3, cool, there's going to be more aliens, it's going to be just like Aliens, it's going to be more fighting, it's going to be cool, it's like Vietnam in space. Instead, we got a very claustrophobic movie about Ripley running around with no guns on a prison planet, which is cool in its own way, but it wasn't what I wanted, and I'm very young at the time, so I'm obviously no connoisseur of cinema at that age, but I was disappointed because I wanted to see more cool aliens, more guys in suits. More things running around. And the Dog Runner alien, as cool as it looks, doesn't look as good as the warrior type that we saw in Aliens. So I was like,
man, that effect has not aged well at all.
I don't know. I still think if you go back and watch the original Aliens, the warriors still look good. But depending on what transfer you're watching, you can see them hiding in the background.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about the Runner alien in the third one. That early CGI just has not aged well at all.
Oh, yeah, that I can definitely agree to that. And I haven't been as excited with the alien side properties with Prometheus and Covenant.
Oh, God, don't get me started on fucking Prometheus.
I mean, yay, they're cool that they happen in the same universe, but it's unnecessary. I mean, Ripley's story has been told. Alien Resurrection kind of pissed on it, but... It's over, man. I mean, if you're going to tell a story in the Alien universe, do something new. Do something interesting. And Prometheus just... It left me unsatisfied, unfulfilled.
My problem with Prometheus is how much everybody in that... In order for the plot to work, everybody has to be a complete moron.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that really bother me, is the fact that, you know, trained professional people,
scientists,
not
no less,
behave like this.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
And it's like it's necessary for them to suddenly have like half their cerebrum torn out in order for the plot to work. No, sod off. That's just bad writing.
And then finally, hold on. I got to talk about this for just 2 seconds. You all know, I live and breathe Twitter. I talk about RoboCop a fuck ton. RoboCop 2014.
Oh.
Fredo, you broke my heart. And just, oh, fuck you, man.
All right. Okay. Well, moving swiftly on. That's about all the time we have for Ask the Geek questions this week. Thank you, as always, for sending them in. As always, you can send them to us through the email at drgonzo@nerdofthethirdpower.com. We love getting your questions, love reading them, so go ahead and get your questions in. You might just get it read on the air.
Yes, you will!
And so with that, now that we've had our vegetables, let's jump into the meat of this discussion, and that is Lucifer and Good Omens. And Skyblaze, this is actually one that you brought to the table, so why don't you go ahead and get us started on this one.
It's been something that I've noticed, actually. There's been a fair few shows on TV recently which have covered the topic of, you know, heaven and hell and religion and morality, I guess. And specifically the two that me and Kat have been appreciating greatly have been Good Omens and Lucifer. Lucifer started a few years ago. It was on Fox, I think, in the US.
Yeah, and I don't remember actually where it was, and then it got canceled and then picked up and rescued by Netflix.
Netflix, yeah. And the basic premise of it is Lucifer, the actual devil, quits his job and goes to become to run a nightclub in Los Angeles. And he somehow gets involved with a LA detective and they solve crime together. And there's a whole bunch of stuff about how heaven and hell work in that universe and what the nature of evil really is and whether or not the devil is actually responsible for what he's been blamed for. And there's all this like very interesting world building stuff. And then there's Good Omens, which is based on a book by Neil Gaiman, whereby it's the Omen. What if the Antichrist was raised by really nice people and he didn't really want to end the world? It's about as close as I can get to a short premise of that book and the show. And the BBC decided they were going to make a show out of it, and it stars David Tennant and Michael Sheen as an angel and a devil.
Oh, it's so good. I've always described it as an angel and a demon misplaced the Antichrist, and Armageddon is a couple days away.
Yeah, that's about a good thumbnail sketch of the show as well.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
And yeah, the Good Omens was broadcast, and all of a sudden, people who had never actually read the book discovered this thing, and the internet exploded.
Geico presents Yikes! Another voicemail from your roommate.
Sup, roomie? Hey, a pipe burst in the basement. It's completely flooded. Anyway, I called for someone to fix it, but in the meantime, I was thinking we could finally have that indoor pool party we've always wanted. I got some cool swan floaty things already going. Could you pick up some chips on your way home? Later.
The Geico Insurance Agency could help keep your personal property protected. Like if your roommate isn't the brightest pool float in the flooded basement. Visit geico.com to see how easy it is to switch and save on renter's insurance.
You shouldn't go to Barnes & Noble and buy 10,000 books just so you can build a book fortress and yell out, "I am your book leader." You shouldn't buy 147 copies of War and Peace, stuff them inside turkeys, and serve them at Thanksgiving as turbookins. And you definitely shouldn't buy up all the copies of Dork Diaries, causing the neighborhood kids to stage a protest in your front yard. But you could, because at the Barnes & Noble Book Haul, you can get over 1,000 titles for 50% off. Stock up at your local Barnes & Noble. Turbookins are fictitious and should not be cooked at home.
Yeah, the response to Good Omens has just been really amazing. It's really nice because I've loved the book for, oh God, like a decade.
Yeah.
I didn't get into it right away. But it's been like over a decade since I've read the book. And it's been my favorite book pretty much ever since. And now that it has like this amazing following, especially on Twitter, it's really, really rewarding.
It's really funny when the actual stars of the damn thing are fans as well.
Oh yeah.
We'll get into certain points of characterization later, I think.
Yeah. So, like you were saying, Skyblaze, what's really interesting about these two particular titles is that they are ones that have a more sympathetic outlook on traditional villains. Mm. And I feel like that's part of a trend. I was thinking about this earlier today about how far we've come since the Satanic Panic. Because I play a lot of D&D, and my dad played a lot of D&D during the Satanic Panic. So it's interesting to me that we have slowly, through pop culture and our chosen medias, we have been erasing or reevaluating our traditional villains, our storybook villains, because we had shows like Buffy that showed us sympathetic portrayals of vampires and werewolves, and we've had a ton of those since then. And we had Charmed, which showed us sympathetic views of witches and witchcraft, which is, you know, something that we've literally demonized for, you know, like people burned and were hanged for presumed witchcraft. And now we can make a TV show and remake that same TV show and still have it be immensely popular. I think that's kind of impressive. So I feel like now we're at the point where we are reanalyzing the biggest villain of like modern history, which is the devil. Mm. And I feel like that's a really interesting point that we're at, because it sort of reflects, not to get like too into topics that we don't talk about on this show, but it kind of reflects the times that we live in. Like we discuss more about what does the Bible actually say and what does that mean? And we have come away a little more open-minded about, you know, did the devil really do anything wrong? Like, why do we blame the devil for everything? And are demons even real? And what does that even mean? And there's so much that we've accomplished in the last, I'd say even like 20 years, in terms of making these themes more talked about, so that we can actually talk about, was the devil really that bad? Does the devil even exist, without getting figuratively crucified by society? And
one of the most interesting things that Lucifer sets up for me is to change the perspective on Lucifer's fall from being an angel to being the devil, as turning it from, you know, a great victory for heaven into being a tragedy for him, and how awful it was for him to say, look, I just want to make my own decisions, and for him to be so horrifically punished for it.
Yeah, and I also thought it was really interesting because Lucifer is more, and I don't know if this is a bit of a stretch, but he's less of a Satan and more of a Hades.
Yeah, a little bit. He doesn't get people. He gets by on charm and, you know, making a funny comment.
Yeah, he doesn't quite get people. He gets people's base desires, but he doesn't really understand anything about people beyond those base desires and how he can manipulate them. But also as his duties and the fact that a large percentage of the show is him shirking those duties, and then the fallout from him shirking those duties. And his duties in the show is more of a Hades than of a Satan. Satan is there to torment people, and sure, he does that when he's in hell, I guess. We never really see very much of it. But it's more like he's more like a guardian. He's more like he's keeping the souls of hell at bay. And it's more of a job.
It's kind of like he's set hell up to do the job for him. You know, he doesn't really want to get his hands dirty with all of this awful stuff, you know, torture and everything. So he's got his demons to do the actual torture for him. And hell's been set up in such a way, for those that haven't seen the show, hell is set up in such a way that it's your own guilt that keeps you imprisoned in hell. And you're kind of locked in these time loops where you keep living your, like, terrible decisions and all the horrible actions that you've taken over and over again. And that's the only thing that's keeping you there. So he's kind of like managed to arrange it in such a way that he's got this very hands-off position where it's like, you know, a soul arrives in hell, it kind of, it punishes itself. So he doesn't have to get involved. So he's like, "What? Why am I even here?" Hello?
Yeah, I was trying to think of a good comment, but I couldn't think of.
And I've not seen either of these, so I can't really comment. Yeah, I'm literally just here holding the microphone.
Shall we talk about his relationship with the main female lead?
Yeah, because I think that's part of what... I think it's sort of Lucifer's relationship with Detective...
Chloe Decker.
Decker, yeah. His relationship with Decker is... I think what causes probably a lot of it to stray from the comics, a lot of the setup of the TV show strays from the comics, but I don't know the comics very well. I just know that, you know, they turned it into a procedural cop show because that's what they can put on TV.
A lot of the stuff in the comics is very out there and wouldn't really translate very well to a TV show, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
You'd need a much bigger budget for one thing.
Yeah. So his relationship with Decker is really interesting because he doesn't get her. And we've talked about this, you know, a few minutes ago, but he doesn't understand selfless people.
It's also that his powers don't work on her.
Yes.
And without that crutch, he's completely at sea. He's like, how do I cope with you?
But it's also
that also fascinates him at the same time because yeah, you know, this is someone he can't manipulate,
and it forces him to change. And I think that's part of what makes Lucifer such an interesting show is his progression as a character, and you see it through multiple lenses. You see it through his own eyes. You see it through, one of his hellish servant's eyes, you see it through his angelic brother's eyes, you see it through Chloe Decker's eyes.
Through his therapist's eyes, which is a very interesting twist.
God, his therapist. I feel so bad for her.
She tries so hard.
And he's so dumb. He's really so dumb about so many things because he just doesn't get people. He's really bad at self-analysis. He's bad at seeing his own faults. And I think that's actually a really good portrayal of Lucifer is somebody who, like, it's interesting from this perspective that he thinks of himself as sort of a martyr. There's like an irony there that he doesn't think he really did anything wrong and his punishment didn't fit the crime. And like, he doesn't do wrong. You know, he'll do little bits of evil, but like not the evil that people accuse him of. And certainly like, he doesn't see himself as a bad person. So he has a really hard time self-analyzing because he's so caught up in his own image of himself.
Yeah, one of the fact that he doesn't lie, I mean, he will just not say a thing, but he doesn't tell direct lies, which is like the whole, he is the prince of lies who doesn't tell a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really an interesting point. One of the most recent series on Netflix, one of the most kind of awful and tragic moments was that big breakthrough he had with this therapist, where he finally does take a good look inside himself and admits what his big problem is. And you know, you find out that he is actually completely consumed by self-loathing, and it's so awful and tragic and painful. You know, sympathy for the devil, no, really.
And I think, yeah, sympathy for the devil is what makes this show, I don't want to say unique, but it makes it compelling because we're in a place in society now where we can actually analyze and think a little bit harder about, we all went to Sunday school or most of us went to church or were forced to go to church as a kid. A lot of people reasons. And this is a show that allows us our own thoughts and feelings about religion and about the devil and what we think about the concept of evil and where evil resides. And I think that's what makes this show really interesting for a lot of people, is it makes you question. But it's also really goddamn entertaining, because Lucifer is really, really entertaining.
Goddamn, is Tom Ellis pretty.
Oh, he's so pretty. I mean, yeah. Wasn't that like the campaign ad for the him, like on for the Netflix season? It's him coming out of a pool.
Yep.
Just looking, oh, so good.
There's like,
oh, so good.
Okay, I'm sold.
Temptation accomplished.
Oh. Achievement get.
Now, in contrast, Good Omens is totally different in every way from Lucifer.
Oh yeah, it's got much more of a comic bent.
Yes.
But then having, based on a book that's half written by Terry Pratchett, what do you expect?
So, I love Good Omens. It's so amazing. I love it. I could go on forever about it. But I think what appeals about Good Omens to you, Sky Blaze? Because I could go on for a while.
I think one of the main things that most people have taken away from it is how fascinating and cute the dynamic between Crowley and Aziraphale is.
It is really cute.
The other thing is like the idea of, you know, what if the Antichrist just went, nah, I'm good. Thanks. I'm good with my family and the earth as it is. I keep all my stuff here. Take Armageddon back. That's the bit with the dog. The bit with the dog. You're given a hellish hellhound, a hellish servant.
Don't call him dog.
Puppy. I love that.
For me, what makes Good Omens so interesting, at least from like an analytical point of view, is that they talk over and over and over about the ineffable plan. And, you know, we're always reminded again about ineffability in society. You know, we always hear about, God, like, the Rhapsody and stuff like that, when, you know, the end times and people will be saved and stuff like that. And,
in
we always because hear...
Because a lot of it comes from British culture, there's also the kind of, especially in the 70s and 80s, the kind of the grinding nature of, you know, you get up, you go to school, you learn, you get a job, you go to that every day, and your entire life is planned out for you. You know, the bureaucracy is eternal, and you know, people who are in power will always be in power, and people who are working class will always be working class. And that's how it has always been and always will be until the end of time. Amen.
Yeah. There's also a lot of the... So in the context of Good Omens, the ineffable plan is that hell and heaven will go to war, and humanity and the world will be destroyed in the process, but one of these entities will win and fuck everyone else, basically. And I think that plays a lot into our fears for, you know, if there is a God, does he even care about us? And the answer is ambiguous in Good Omens because of this ineffable plan. If the plan is truly ineffable, then isn't the subversion of the ineffable plan itself ineffable? And that's one of the questions that never really gets answered. And that's okay. It's okay not to know.
Can God make a rock that's so big that he can't pick it up?
Yeah.
It's that thing.
So you get stuck in this loop. And I like that it shows the series and the book shows us that it's okay. Like, you know, we don't have to have all of the answers in order to move on, in order to be fulfilled. You don't have to know everything. You just have to want to live. Like, that's what the whole thing is about. It's about an angel and a demon who don't want the world to end because they like it.
It's also the idea that it's all right to question things. You know, it's like, but why is this happening? Why is this inevitable? Can we stop it? Certainly in the Anglican Church, the Church of England, which is when I was a kid, that was... I don't know if you know this, but in the UK, I don't know if it still is, but it used to be that the actual law that used to have a certain amount of like regulated worship every day in schools. So we'd have to sing hymns every day, and once a week we'd have to go to actual church, which was weird considering I was raised by a pagan and an agnostic, and I'm a pagan myself, but hey ho. And in Anglican church, it's like you aren't really seeking your own answers. You're just told, you know, this is how it is. This is how it works. This is what God says. And you must obey. And it's that kind of culture. And something like Good Omens really looks at it and says, are we sure about that? But does it in a really humorous and lighthearted way.
Especially through the demon Crowley, because they talk about how Crowley didn't fall so much as sauntered vaguely downward.
Yeah. And because he's so obviously not evil, he's just kind of vaguely mischievous.
Yeah, he's a little more Loki.
Yeah.
He's not even as mean as Loki, he's really not.
And the worst he managed to do was, you know, he made the motorway around the M25 around London, which has notorious for traffic. And it's like, oh, it's a demonic sigil, and everybody in London goes, well, that explains everything. That's the worst you can do. You just make the traffic really awful.
And they talk about in the show, and I don't remember quite in the book, but Crowley says that all he did was question.
Mm.
All he did was ask questions, and that was enough to get you booted out of heaven. And that, you know, it plays into the same things that we've been talking about. These are two franchises, two pieces of media that tell us that are kind of critical of how we have existed as cultures up until now, where you haven't been allowed to question. And if you do question, then you are a problem. And now we're a little bit past that. And it's okay. And it's okay to ask questions. And it's okay to not get the answers.
It's okay to make fun of things.
Yes. I mean, and that's such a big deal. It's such a big deal because of the historical consequences of not being able to criticize religion. And again, we won't go too deep into our own thoughts and of religion and stuff, but in a historical sense, there has always been a religion problem.
All
over the world. And
Spanish Inquisition
has led to a lot of really... The Spanish Inquisition, like, I don't know if you've ever studied what they did to witches across Scotland, or... puts the Salem witch trials, you know. So, and that's even something that comes up in Good Omens, is they burn a witch in one of the chapters. And these are, you know, I totally don't even know what I was going to say. It's just, these are such good representations of it being okay to ask questions, it being okay to have doubts. You're allowed to come to your own conclusions. And it's smart and it's safer and it's good to think for yourself and not just do exactly what you're told all the time. It's okay to have a guide if you need a guide, but also, like,
it's okay to think for yourself, it's too. Also okay, and these are really important
okay
messages
to have,
nowadays.
Have a friend who's not on the same quote-unquote side as you.
Yeah. You know, it's okay to disagree. It's okay to, yeah, like the whole thing about Good Omens is who've known each other for 6,000 years working together. It, you know, all of these things are good and encouraged. I think that's what part of what makes them, I think we don't think about these overtly when we're watching these shows, but I think, you know, deep down we're like, ah, this is why I like it. I think this is, it's not just because Lucifer's really pretty and Crowley and Aziraphale are just the cutest couple ever. Like there's just, we're like deep down, we're getting a really needed message.
There's also, can we talk about like the casting of Crowley and Aziraphale?
Yes.
Yeah. When I heard that it was David Tennant and Martin Sheen, I was like, I don't know about that. And then I saw them in costume and went, oh my God, yes. And then I saw them on the actual show, and that's entirely how my mental image of them is now permanently. That's what they look like and sound like now.
Yeah, I, you know, like I've thought for many, many years about what my ideal casting would be like. And now I don't even remember what it was because this, this casting ended up being so good. And I didn't really like them in costume until I watched it. I was like, oh, really? We're going to do David Tennant with long hair. That's what we're going to do. And then I watched it and I'm like, oh, David Tennant with long hair. Please tell me more.
I would like to subscribe to your newsletter.
That's exactly how it went. I just, they couldn't have, well, also because I had listened to the BBC radio show and I really liked the vocal casting of Peter Serafinowicz as Crowley. I really, really like it. And I would still think that he would make a really excellent for live action as well. But since I've got David Tennant, like, we're not going to outrank him in terms of stardom, so we're just accepted that this is going to be our Crowley. And that just, oh my gosh, what an incredible job that they did. For all that Lucifer strayed from the comics, Good Omens, like duct taped itself to the book and was like, I will keep every piece of dialogue the same.
I think the fact that like, Neil Gaiman was so closely involved
yes.
in the scripting probably helped.
Yes.
Whereas to the best of my knowledge, he was barely involved in Lucifer. He just kind of like went, yeah, okay, guys, you carry on.
Yeah, Good Omens follows the book so incredibly closely that you could... You couldn't do it in order, but you could definitely like find your section of the book and find the part in the episode and follow
it.
I
also love that all the Queen music is in it.
Yes.
It made me laugh so hard.
Really, really good soundtrack.
Because that the whole thing about like every album in your car will gradually turn into Queen's greatest hits has been a running joke in UK fandom for decades. Has been a running joke since that book came out.
And it's true.
To the point where there was a friend of a friend said, oh, there's a new album by somebody that has just come out. I'm like, oh, well, I only know some of this stuff. It's like, oh, great, I'll make you a mixtape. And handed it and gave, I think it was actually a CD, but gave them the CD and it was unmarked. And they put it in their car stereo because that's how they always listen to new music, and it was Queen's greatest hit.
It could not be anything else.
Magnificent troll. But yeah, the soundtrack has been amazing. The casting has been amazing. Martin Sheen going on Twitter to explain that he got into character by reading
like Run Low on Time. Let's just give our overall reviews of these two entities because they are very different, and we are trying to cram a lot of talk into one episode. So okay, lay it down. What is Lucifer like? How do you like it?
Lucifer starts out as a supernatural police procedural and then develops into this very, very strong character drama that's really quite dark in places and explores the nature of morality and the nature of evil and what it means to trust people and develop a relationship. Whereas Good Omens is much more lighthearted, but does deal with some fairly deep themes, but doesn't do it in the same kind of affecting way. It kind of tweaks you subconsciously while making you laugh like a drain. So, yeah, I think that is a fairly decent thumbnail sketch of those.
And what are your... I mean, like, on a terms of how much do you personally enjoy them?
I enjoy them on pretty different levels, actually. The Good Omens is the sort of thing I'd reach for if I'm feeling a bit sad. Because it is so... There's a lot of joy in it. Lucifer is the sort of thing I'd look at when, you know, I'm feeling maybe a bit pensive, or I'm already in a decent mood, so I don't mind something a bit darker. But it does have its incredibly funny moments and clever writing. I couldn't say which one I want like more, because they are so different. They are quite different moods of show. What about you, Kat?
Well, I haven't finished Lucifer. I'm still very behind, so but it's one of my shows that I put on while I'm working, not like at work, but like when I'm working on convention stuff or just like editing photos or something. I can throw Lucifer on my second screen and just enjoy it going on in the background, and just, you know, having it on and taking it in and stopping every 5 minutes to eat up some piece of drama. I really enjoyed... Sorry, I just hit my mic. That was great. I really enjoy this show. The second season is a little in some places, but overall, I just really enjoy the show and the concept of the show. Good Omens, on the other hand, is the show that I sit my friends down and I go, we're binging this right now. So here's some booze and yep. Get ready to laugh. I think I've probably watched it since it came out, probably seen it beginning to end six times. Because again, Good Omens is like my favorite book. So I immediately like binged it and then binged it with my roommate. And then I was working a lot of weekends to get ready for some stuff at work. So I was actually throwing it on in the background at work and just listening to it. And was getting through it in like a day. I don't know why my workplace doesn't block us from watching like Netflix. Not well, they do block us Netflix, block us Amazon Prime. Really should. Because I've managed to watch Good Omens like three times.
Well, now that you said that, and you said that you have coworkers who listen to this show, you might have just screwed yourself on that. Maybe you'll go in next week and they'll have actually blocked it.
It's, you know what, the members of IT aren't going to do that to me. Like if somebody from HR heard that, sure. IT, they're worse than me. But yeah, both really good shows. If you are into a more philosophical approach to things, you might want to check them out. I cannot recommend Good Omens enough. And I'm constantly just... like telling, shaking people, going, watch it.
All right. So it sounds like both of these properties, both Lucifer and Good Omens, definitely worth checking out then?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, that is about all the time that we have for Nerd to the Third Power this week. Thank you as always for tuning in. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks. As always, I'm Dr. Gonzo.
I'm the Cat.
I'm Skyblaze.
All right. See you guys in 2 weeks. Taka, play us out.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now, a thought from Geico Motorcycle.
It took 15 minutes to take a spirit animal quiz online.
Please be the cheetah. Please be the cheetah.
And learn your animal isn't the cheetah, but the far less appealing blobfish.
Oh, come on.
To add insult to injury, you could have used those 15 blobfish minutes to switch your motorcycle insurance to Geico.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on motorcycle insurance.